The Jordan Cove gas export terminal on the Oregon coast is just an idea at this point. At the moment, there is no terminal. There is no plant for turning natural gas into liquid. There is no 200-mile-plus pipeline carrying gas to it. But there could be all of the above, and the steps toward the plan being either carried out or laid to rest continue. One major step passed on Friday with the closing of a comment period on the Jordan Cove plan. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, is one of several agencies that has to approve Jordan Cove. FERC's invitation to comment just closed, and many people took FERC up on the invitation, especially conservation groups, two of whom are represented on the program today. Leslie Adams is with the Waterkeeper Alliance. She's the Western Regional Coordinator. She joins us by phone. Leslie, welcome back to the Exchange.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. Susan Jane Brown has also returned to the Jefferson Exchange. She is staff attorney with the Western Environmental Law Center. Hi, Susan Jane.
Hi, Jeff. Thank you.
Let's start with you, Susan Jane. What did your group do to mobilize comments?
Well, we worked with a coalition of organizations and private landowners. We've been working together for a couple of years now, actually several years for many of us when this project was first proposed as an LNG or liquefied natural gas import proposal. So we've been working with conservation organizations, watershed groups, private landowners who own property within the pipeline right-of-way. And we all took a hard look at the draft environmental impact statement and then prepared comments based on particular issues, whether they were wildlife or water quality or eminent domain and private landowner concerns, and compiled all of that into one giant comment letter that we submitted with the help of many organizations on Friday.
One giant comment letter with how many signatures?
We had several dozen signatures on our comment letter alone. I believe that FERC received probably several thousand comments. I know our organization reached out to our individual membership database, and many of our members, probably a couple thousand, submitted comments, and I know many other organizations did the same thing.
And what did your organization do, Leslie Adams, at the Waterkeeper Alliance, which I should point out is the Riverkeeper and Baykeeper type groups?
Yeah, we work in coalition with Susan Jane and Welk to organize with, like she said, landowners and conservation organizations against this proposal. So we were involved in the, kind of the coalition comments that are the legal basis for why we're opposing this project. But we also worked with other organizations around the country, and particularly those that are concerned with fracking and climate change issues, because really when you get down to it, FERC's analysis is deficient because of those two reasons, and we can get into that in a minute. But my kind of scratch on the back of a napkin showed that FERC received well over 25,000 comments, probably closer to 30,000 comments opposing this proposal.
Any idea what the number was in favor?
I don't, but I would guess it was very small. I mean, we see them coming through the docket on FERC, and, you know, they I'm guessing maybe a couple hundred. I don't know, Susan Jane. Do you think that's probably in the right?
Yeah, I think that's no. I think that's probably right. I was taking a look as well as comments were coming in over last week, really, and most of the comments, I would say probably 96% were opposed to the project. A lot of them came from private landowners as well. There were some comments that were in favor, and I would generally say that those were out of state comments. They were not coming from Oregonians.
You talk about being able to read them as they came in, so entered into the public record and remained there?
That's right. That's right. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission maintains an online database, so all of the documents that are filed, whether they come from the project proponent, like the draft EIS, for example, or comment letters from the public, all of that goes into one place, and it comes across. You get a nice little email, and you can see what people are saying about the project.
So, Susan Jane, I'm trying to figure out, are we talking about a lot of form letters in here? Are we talking about a lot of individual comments, a mixture thereof?
It was really a mixture. You know, what's interesting about this project, because the pipeline, which would go from Coos Bay down to Malin, which is on the border of Oregon and California, that pipeline crosses, about 60% of that pipeline crosses private land. And so there are many private landowners that would be affected by this pipeline. So many of the comments are coming directly from private landowners, and those are definitely not form letters. They're heartfelt almost all of them are very angry at the proposition that private property could be taken really for the benefit of a international company and not for Oregonians.
We're talking about comments submitted both for and against, and largely against in the case of this program, with our guests for the Jordan Cove Gas Export Terminal plan for the North Bend area. Leslie Adams is with the Waterkeeper Alliance. She's the Western Regional Coordinator. Susan Jane Brown, whom you just heard, is with the Western Environmental Law Center as staff attorney. You can join the conversation about Jordan Cove and the pipeline, 800-838-3760. Anywhere in our listening area, tell us if you actually submitted comments too. 800-838-3760. Send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. You are different groups with not always the same mission. What is at the core of each of your group's oppositions? And let's start with you, Susan Jane.
Well, the Western Environmental Law Center is a nonprofit environmental law firm, and we represent organizations and individuals in federal litigation. So we're really a client-based and client-driven law firm. So we are responding to the demands that are coming from our clients, and those concerns, which Leslie can certainly also talk about, really have to do with why many of us live in Oregon. It has to do with the wildlife habitat, clean water, recreational opportunities, certainly the independent spirit of being able to own private property and do what you will with that property. And so, you know, the concerns that I'm hearing from our clients is that this project will really threaten all of those values and all of those natural resources that Oregonians hold dear. And Leslie can certainly put a fine point on that.
All right, Leslie.
Well, Waterkeeper Alliance is an international organization. We're actually based in New York, and we have over 240 waterkeeper programs in 27 countries. So locally, folks are probably most familiar with Rogue River Keeper down in the south, Klamath River Keeper in Northern California. We also have a Willamette River Keeper, a Tualatin River Keeper, and a Columbia River Keeper here in Oregon. And all of these organizations are autonomous, but we're held together through the Waterkeeper Alliance with the common thread of clean water, that we all believe our communities deserve the rights to clean water. And so with this particular project, we are very concerned about the impacts that would take place to our water supplies, and anyone in Oregon knows that we value and appreciate and love our rivers and streams and coastline here in Oregon. And the pipeline alone would cross about 400 waterways from Malin over to Coos Bay. And many of those streams are critical habitat for coho salmon. And I'm not sure there's anything that's more iconic in Oregon than our wild salmon. And here in the south, our coho are really struggling to survive. And so this proposal to ship fossil fuels out to Asia at the detriment to our clean water and our fish is a very big concern for us and many other Oregonians. And then I would say on a larger scale at Waterkeeper Alliance, we have a clean and safe energy campaign where we work with and support waterkeepers around the world that are trying to stop dirty fossil fuel development from harming their water supplies. But we're also in support of transitioning to a clean energy economy, and that's clearly where we need to go, and we need to do it quickly.
There are a couple of parts here. We're talking about actually taking the gas from the ground in the first place, and I know there are objections based on fracking. There's the transport through the pipeline. There's the export of it to other countries. And I know it's not really possible, but if there were not a pipeline with this, would you object as strenuously, Leslie?
Well, it's kind of a theoretical question. It's not an option, right? I mean, they need the pipeline, but we're opposed to spending more money and harming more resources to dig more fossil fuels out of the ground. I mean, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has been very clear that we need to act quickly, and most of the fossil fuels that are remaining in the ground need to be left in the ground if we are to avoid catastrophic climate change. And so if you look at all the facts here, you know, we support jobs, right? I mean, we want our communities to be thriving, and we want high-paid jobs for Oregonians and Americans. And the fact remains that an investment in fossil fuels is a much poorer decision than an investment in clean energy. And there's a lot of studies out there, including one that says if you invest $1 million in gas and oil, you create about 5 jobs. If you invest that same amount, $1 million, in renewable energy, you create 17 jobs. And that makes a lot of sense to me, that we would want to create more jobs with the same amount of investment.
We're talking about the Jordan Cove gas export terminal and pipeline proposed for the South Coast in Oregon, and the process that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is moving through, which included a comment period closing on Friday. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or at email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Pam and Dexter. Welcome to the exchange with Leslie Adams and Susan Jane Brown.
Hi. Well, I'm also very opposed to this pipeline. My line is no major infrastructure built for fossil fuels. I mean, once the infrastructure's built, then it's more reason to pump it out. So rail makes more sense because you can use rail for more than fossil fuels. But I went to the Roseburg hearing with FERC, and first of all, the panel looked totally bored the whole time when people are passionately giving their stories of their property being taken and the potential harm that this could cause. And it didn't even appear by looking at their faces that they really cared. And then I had heard at that hearing someone said FERC is basically funded by the permits for these types of projects, which would, to me, be a conflict of interest. And I know similar to that, Doug Ami, the Department of Geology and Minerals in Oregon, is funded by mining permits that we found out when we were finding the rock quarry out here in Dexter. And then I was at a 350 Eugene meeting about a month ago, and a lawyer from an environmental firm got up to speak about this, because we basically said, you know, this is the same thing as the Keystone XL pipeline, that we got to oppose all these types of projects. And he said basically what his take on, he had been told by an insider that FERC is going to approve it, and they're going to have to go through with a lawsuit to stop it. So I wondered if either of your guests have heard that, and also about the funding for FERC, if that is true, that they're funded by basically allowing these types of projects to go through and getting the money from the permitting process.
Let's find
out. And thanks for your work on this. I think it's really important that a lot of people don't even know about this.
Right. Thanks.
And that's where the media comes in.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Pam. Appreciate it. Susan Jane, you want to take on some of Pam's concerns there?
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, I think the concern about the funding issue, I do know that for large projects like this, oftentimes the applicant, which in this case is Jordan Cove and Pacific Connector, will provide funding for experts that are housed within, for example, in this case, FERC, to do some of the analysis and information generation and that sort of thing, the environmental analysis. That goes into the draft environmental impact statement. I don't know for sure whether or not that was the case in this situation. I would guess that it probably was. But I also know that Congress does appropriate money to operate FERC like it does for other federal governmental organizations. But the other question about whether or not, you know, whether FERC is going to approve this project and it will be up to the courts to decide, I think that's probably accurate. FERC has been pretty clear for many years that it views its role as permitting projects and letting the market decide what will actually be constructed. Certainly we don't find that to be a very satisfying response coming from a federal agency, but that's the answer that we've been given from FERC. So I would fully expect that whatever decision FERC makes, I think the ultimate decision will be made by at least a 3-judge court in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Well, FERC is not the only agency involved, though, right? I would assume there'd have to be other approvals and permits along the way as well.
Yes, that's right. There are dozens and dozens of state, local, and federal approvals that still need to occur. One of the key points that we noted in our comments was that the biological assessment, which is really the analysis for how this project will affect listed species, so the salmon that Leslie was talking about, terrestrial species like the northern spotted owl and Marlboro murrelet, marine species as well, that biological assessment actually isn't complete yet, even though the draft environmental impact statement relies on it. So there's quite a bit of information that we don't even actually have yet about how this project will affect the natural resources of Oregon. So we believe that those sorts of emissions will hopefully weigh in our favor once we do finally make our case in court.
Take a couple of minutes talking about the Jordan Cove gas terminal and proposed pipeline. FERC's comment period closed on Friday. We're talking to Leslie Adams and Susan Jane Brown. Susan Jane Brown is with the Western Environmental Law Center. Leslie Adams with the Waterkeeper Alliance. You can join us at 800-838-3760 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Roy in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. Yeah, I love your program.
Thank you.
I was wondering if the Jordan Cove project is completed and the pipelines and everything, and we get the overdue Cascadia Fault earthquake and tsunami, what might happen to all that that's created?
All right. Thanks for the question, Roy. I appreciate it. So we'll put that to Leslie and any seismic analysis that's gone on about the viability of the pipeline under those circumstances.
Well, I appreciate the question because there's a huge bucket of issues that people have with this project, and the people opposing it are very diverse and run quite a big spectrum from left to right. And one of the major issues that people are really concerned about is safety. There's a whole bunch of safety concerns, and the terminal would be built on a sand spit that is very vulnerable to earthquakes and tsunamis. And if folks had read an article in the Oregonian recently, there was a whistleblower last month that had been hired by Jordan Cove to do soil analyses, and she actually quit her job doing that because of the lack of integrity that the company was showing when she found contaminated soils. So there's a lot of concern about that, and in many people's opinion, Jordan Cove has not adequately addressed how to deal with that.
We have an email here from Boyd in Wolf Creek. He wants to report that public testimony in favor of Jordan Cove and the pipeline were prominent in a hearing at the Seven Feathers venue, that being Canyonville, Oregon. Union reps were vigorous in their support, so that's one source of support. And there has been a lot said about jobs here. Just in terms of environmental issues, Leslie, I mean, much has been said about digging under rivers. You mentioned 400 stream crossings with the pipeline, which is about 230-plus miles. There have been cases where pipelines have gone under streams before without any particular damage. Is it the diameter, the three-foot pipe, that's the issue?
Well, there's a lot of issues, and you can look at the state of Oregon's comments that they submitted. Department of Environmental Quality has a lot of remaining concerns about not just drilling under the Rogue River and other major rivers, but the sedimentation that would be caused by laying pipe through a lot of smaller streams that, again, serve as critical habitat for coho. And some of these streams, they need to blast with dynamite. Which would create a lot of sediment. And when, again, we're talking about our coho, it's kind of death by a thousand cuts. You know, how much do we want to value these fish, and how many times are we going to allow additional pressure to be put on them and expect them to survive and thrive? But, Jeffrey, I really want to make sure I have a moment here to say, beyond all the environmental concerns, which there are many, and I share them, and they're at the root of why I'm involved in this, I really want to speak to the private landowners out there that are being threatened with eminent domain. I'm grateful that I'm not dealing with this, and I'm very sorry that my Oregonian neighbors are being threatened with the seizure of their private property by a Canadian gas company. I mean, we're talking about a Canadian gas company that wants to ship gas through Oregon and out to Asia to make a whole lot of money, billions of dollars of money, and they are threatening these private landowners that have worked all their lives to have their ranches and their homes that they would like to give to their children and their grandchildren. And it's just not fair. It is just not fair. And I really hope that Oregonians and our elected officials can stand with the landowners of Oregon and say that this is not right.
Another call here from Don in Roseburg. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the Jordan Cove gas terminal and pipeline.
Yes, good morning, Jeff. It's a privilege to talk to you. Enjoy your program.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that we have a pipeline, the Williams Pipeline, came through our ranch 53 years ago. And we've never had any problems. It's crossed both our rivers, and we just finished a fishing derby. We had a wonderful fishing derby. So I don't share all the concerns. Maybe I should be worried, but I haven't lost any sleep over it for 53 years. and no one else has either, and it's gone through near homes and over our hills and through the woods, and so I don't mean to make fun of anyone, but I know if people are worried, I'd like to tell them that, not to be worried, because we've had this pipeline through our pasture, and whenever I get close to a digging, why, I call the company, and they send a man right out and tell me where I can or cannot dig.
All right.
And as far as I know, there's been no accidents in those 53 years. And so if they had any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
All right. Thanks for the call, Don. Appreciate the perspective on that. Just because of the limits of time we have left, I want to move on because we've been talking about pipelines and safety generally. But I want to bring this one to Susan Jane then, because you're at the Western Environmental Law Center. I have to believe that at this point you've identified any one of a number of possible legal avenues if Jordan Cove and the Pacific Connector do pass administrative reviews and then look like they're headed for approval.
Yes, and that's certainly what this comment period was part of, was identifying and setting forth our legal concerns, and certainly we did do that in our comments. You know, I would note that our comments are almost 140 pages long, and that's just coming from us, not to mention the hundreds and thousands of others who submitted their comments as well. I think, honestly, you know, yes, we've identified quite a few legal deficiencies, and I think really it's going to be a matter of honing in on the best ones, because we have, frankly, we have a lot to choose from. This is a dangerous project. We don't think that it's legal, and we're concerned with the impacts that it'll have on Oregonians and their private property.
Leslie Adams, about half a minute. What are the next steps now?
I actually want to leave on a note. I want to thank the previous caller. I'm glad that there's been no explosions on his property, but that's not the case with pipelines across the country. And I would note that that pipeline on his property was built for public good, for public benefit, for gas to move around and Americans to use that gas. This pipeline would have no public benefit because the gas is being exported and not used here domestically.
All right. Susan Jane Brown and Leslie Adams, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange to talk about the gas terminal and pipeline.
Thanks so much, Jeff.